Gratitude, being thankful for just the gift of love and grace that God flows and pours into our lives every day. Remarkable story today. I think that the story of the 10 lepers, as it's called, is profoundly revealing and profoundly grateful. It's pure joy. 10 lepers, why not 12? 12 for the tribes of Israel. 12 is a big number in the Testaments. Why not 7? 7's a number of perfection. When we're thinking about the metaphysical significance of numbers, which the Hebrew people do all the time, they have this wonderful numerical significance that they give to letters and words. And there is meaning in all of these things. We were covering one of them in our Bible study on Tuesday. We were going through Matthew's genealogy of Jesus. And from Abram to David, there are 14 generations. And from David down to the exile, there are 14 generations. And from the exile to Jesus, there are 14 generations. And when you take the numbers that represent the letters in David's name, they add up to 14. And this kind of significance is being studied in a theological discipline called gematria in the Hebrew Testament. They know the middle character of their testament based on this. So why 10? But 10 it is. And I think we get some clues to this because the story tells us that Jesus is traveling in what's called the mesos, the in-between place. He's traveling in a border region between two very distinct areas. He's traveling in what we refer to as our border with Mexico, the Napantla, the merging or the blending of cultures that takes place when they come to one another against a boundary or division. He's traveling in the mesos between Samaria and Galilee. So he's traveling in between the region where he's grown up and a region that's fraught with history and all kinds of significance for the history of his people and for the reality of his time. And he's traveling between that and this region of Samaria, which is a much ridiculed and ethnically and religiously prejudiced against, I didn't say that well, region and people, the Samaritans. We recall where Samaritans come from. Samaritans are essentially this, what's left of the northern 10 tribes of Israel, the lost tribes, that Assyria kind of blends out of existence. And what's left in this very interbred, mulatto, mestizo, not pure Jew region are the Samaritans. And the pure Jews, the religious and ethnic Jews of Jesus' time, look down on them terribly, and in some cases violently, against these Samaritans, these not pure people. So Jesus is traveling in this region. He's not opting for one or the other, and 10 is a very significant Gentile number when you think about it. 10 has a significance, profound significance, in Gentile culture. We have 10 fingers and 10 toes, right? Everybody does. But 10 is a significant number. And in between these two worlds, he goes to a village and he encounters 10 lepers. Now, this is a terrible disease in Jesus' time, and it's a terrible disease throughout the Hebrew Testament. It's not the Hansen's disease that we understand and call leprosy today in both its infectious and non-infectious forms, a very degenerative, wasting disease. Lepros means white and scaly. Leprosy is a condition of the skin, a range, a category of skin afflictions in Jesus' time and in the Hebrew Testament. Leprosy appears as this whiting, this chalkiness of the flesh. And that's bad enough, but also it has its theological significance for people as well. Any kind of affliction like that is an outward, visible sign of an inward spiritual impurity. Affliction is a symbol or an outward sign of sinfulness, to put it concisely. not just ailing and illness, but impurity. And this is the reason that lepers are shunned. Not necessarily because we feel like if we touch them, we'll get it on us and it will be contagious. There is some sense of that. But the reality of it is, if we touch a person who is spiritually impure, then we get spiritually impure too. And the only way for us to repurify ourselves is to go to temple or synagogue and have a priest perform a ritual multiple times in order to make us clean, spiritually pure, once again, so that we can then participate in the rites and rituals, sacrifice, and all of that. It's beginning to make some sense in light of the story. Jesus tells these 10 lepers, go and show yourselves to the priests. They have been ostracized and shunned for God knows how long. No touch, no human touch for years, perhaps. Imagine that. Imagine the indignity that comes from having to announce yourself whenever you're out and about in public by ringing a bell before you enter into a street, by shouting unclean to all of the people that you encounter well before you come into close proximity so that they have the opportunity to avoid you. Imagine this in your own experience. What a devastating, dehumanizing, spirit-killing kind of existence this is. And when Jesus comes to this town, 10 lepers, we don't know anything else about them. We learn a little bit more. But 10 come out and say, Jesus, Master, Lord, Kurios is the word, Lord, heal us. Save us from this. It's destroying us. It's death. It's a living death. It's hell on earth. Save us from this. And that's when he says, go and show yourselves to the priests. And he comes by this honestly. It has kind of a cynical smack to it. But the reality of it is, this is what they would need to do according to the law and tradition of the Hebrew people. Leviticus 13 and 14, if you want to dig into this, and understand what these religious prescriptions are and how this whole process works. It involves water purification. It involves multiple visits to the priest. It involves an expanse of time. It involves animal sacrifice. It's a whole range of things that are described that need to be done in order for priestly ritual to cleanse someone. And then it appears that it doesn't always work because this may be God's persistent judgment on this person. So if the ministrations of the priests don't work, it wasn't meant to be. And they're no better off. Jesus calls them to go according to what's prescribed in the law. Go and show yourselves to the priests. And then, when all 10, it appears, have set off on that journey, they discover that they are already made clean. Not through ritual, not through animal sacrifice, but through the word spoken by the one God has sent to make all things new. They are whole, they are clean. We have to suspect that all of them recognize this, and yet only one turns back. As they're walking along, one, at least, recognizes this, if not all. And he returns, and the scripture says he falls prostrate at Jesus' feet. This is abject gratitude. This is consuming gratitude. This is, I'm not worthy. How did this happen? This is a miracle kind of gratitude. And he falls at the feet of the Lord and gives thanks. When Jesus looks around and says, there were 10. I know there were. And yet one has come back to offer thanks to God for the deliverance that has been received. The other nine, well, let's think about them for a minute. What are they doing? Say it loud.
Going on their merry way.
They're going on their merry way, or they're going to do what they were told to do in the first place. Can we fault them for that? No. Jesus says, go and show yourselves to the priests. Okay, we'll go. So I find it hard to really get down on these nine, and it's easy to shake your finger in Jesus' stories. They were doing what tradition told them needed to be done, and they were doing what Jesus had said they should do. They sought their deliverance through obedience to the law, through their ability to perform under the old covenant, through the priest's ability to perform under the old covenant. And yet one recognizes, at least one recognizes, it isn't that. This deliverance has been accomplished. It is achieved, as Jesus will say from the cross. I have been saved. And he comes back and falls at Jesus' feet, and he says exactly that. And then Jesus says, go, your faith has made you well, in some translations. Your faith has made you whole, in some translations. And in others, the word that's there in Greek, sozo, is actually well defined and well translated. Your faith has saved you. You've been saved by the goodness and the grace and the love of God. And then he lowers the boom. Then he throws in the element of the story that's really the whammy. Like the Good Samaritan story, he says, and this one, this foreigner, is a Samaritan. Out of all of these 10, this one comes back. And this one is a Samaritan of all people. So there's something scandalous about that. There are supposedly the others who can be righteous, can be made righteous under the covenant. But then there is this one who's an outcast, an other, a rejected one, a foreigner, dwelling in this region between the lands. And this one comes in gratitude, and this one recognizes and understands that your faith, Jesus says, has healed you, made you whole. Your faith has saved you. Go your way. He marvels at the ones who have gone. We're not 10 made clean. And the other 9, where are they? This one, a Samaritan, comes and recognizes the fullness of God's grace and deliverance in his life, and simply lives in gratitude for that. The invitation to us all. The invitation to everyone who knows what it is to be separated, outcast, other, ill, afflicted, spiritually drained, and needing that replenishment, that re-enlivening that comes from a genuine encounter with God's Christ. Faith has healed you. Faith has saved you. Now go your way and live that out. It's interesting when we put this story in context, Jesus tells it right after a pretty vigorous set-to with the Pharisees. He argues with the Pharisees a lot. I think they all like it. I know that they do it for a purpose, and that is to get at the truth. Not everything is meant to trip him up or to show this adversarial. They are arguing about ways in which they can come to understand the truth. And right after this vigorous Pharisaic exchange comes this story that seems to upend this idea that the old prescriptions, the old rituals, the external codes are what are going to deliver us and save us. God doesn't seem to be in the equation anywhere. The ministration of the priests, the ritual obligations that the person has. This doesn't sound like grace saving, does it? And yet, this is what Jesus proclaims and pronounces over them all, and over us all. There's a first century writer that I've read quite a lot of, Origen, writes not but a couple of generations after the living ministry of Jesus. And he says this, Christians must retain that sense of thankfulness, if they are not to become like the Pharisees, law and order, religious ritual people, and seek to act as those who live out of grace. Grace is recognized in Jesus' time. And from there on, and Origen writes about this, we don't need to be about external law codes and practices. We need to be about the grace that God is inscribing on our very hearts and living that in thanksgiving, delivering response to grace.